My name is Jay Bernhardt. I'm the moderator for today's panel. And I have some introductory things I'm supposed to say first, so let me start with this. The Public Health Education and Health Promotion section would like to welcome you all to this session titled, drumroll, Impacting Health Through Community Health Workers, Success Stories. How many of you in the room, anybody in the room a community health worker yourself? Let's hear it for the community health workers. The front lines of public health are an important and tough place, and it's great that we respect and honor you, and also that this session describes, you know, evidence-based work that really shows the impact that community health workers can make. We invite all of you to become more involved in the section, the PHEHP section, by attending one of our business meetings, the schedules in the program, stopping by our booth in the exhibit hall, emailing a member of the leadership, or coming to our social this evening, which I think starts at 6:30 or 6 or so. So thank you for coming. Thank you for coming to today's session. The way our session will work is we have four speakers. They each are going to have up to 20 minutes to speak. If they have a little bit less than 20, if they finish a little early, we'll give them time to answer a question or two right after their talk. Otherwise, we'll hold questions to the end. I'm going to introduce all four of them now, and then I'm going to ask each speaker to come up in the order that the slides are loaded here. And we should have 10 to 15 minutes at the end or so for questions. And we'll ask the speakers to all come up to the front at the end so we can take some questions as a panel. I'll introduce all four of them now in the order that they're going to be presenting. Farah Arozema, is that right? Good, all right. Has devoted her career to public health to improving the well-being of high-risk populations, such as the underserved, ethnic minorities, and disaster-prone communities. Farah focuses her interests on the psychosocial aspects of disease, exploring cumulative stressors and the role of race and ethnicity on health outcomes. She has worked both domestically and internationally with vulnerable populations, implementing interventions to augment local healthcare systems with holistic, homegrown, community-informed, and culturally tailored programs. And we'll hear from her in just a minute. Our second speaker is Jessica Solares. She holds a master's degree in public health from Yale University and is a master certified health education specialist, MCHES. She works for a large federally qualified healthcare center in Southern California as a health education manager. She implements and manages multiple preventive evidence-based programs that include lifestyle interventions such as healthy eating and physical activity, and possesses a robust knowledge about chronic diseases like diabetes. She's very passionate about delivering health information to laypersons in a format that's accessible, actionable, and digestible for their use. Jessica, we'll hear from her second. Third is Lindsay Riley, is currently the study coordinator of the DREAM Project at NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health. In this role, she's responsible for the oversight of study implementation, as well as serving as a liaison for study partners, both from the academic and community sectors. She earned her BA in psychology from Washington College and her MPH from New York University, NYU. And last but not least, and I have to pull my phone out for this one, is Laura Wyatt, also from New York. She oversees the collection of and maintenance of data across NYU School of Medicine Center for Study of Asian American Health. In addition to data management, she assists in the dissemination of study findings and provides biostatistical and epidemiological support for the center. She received her MPH in epidemiology at Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. So let's give all four speakers an introductory round of applause for their collective talent and wisdom. And with that, I'd love to invite Farah up as our first speaker.
So, hailing from New Orleans, a very disaster-prone region, this is a homegrown design, so to speak. We had met with several community partners, and one of the things that they kept repeating they wanted to look at was how the environment affected reproductive health. We were looking at how the environment affected cancer. We were looking at how it perhaps affected, the built environment affected obesity and cardiovascular disease. But no one was really looking at how it affected reproductive health. So, novel in its application, we started looking at, splitting up the environmental health sciences department in which I work for, the physiological factors of the environment, and the social environment, elements of the built environment. So air quality, water quality, soil quality, where our food comes from, shelter quality, which was a big deal, especially post-Katrina, infrastructure, much of the housing being affected, and mold becoming a huge issue in these houses that had been remediated. And then in the social environment, we were looking at healthcare access, social support, family, transportation, and violence and safety was a big concern. So looking at a community health worker model, we thought we could help provide health education about environmental health sciences and also provide some of these things, increase healthcare access, increase quality of care, social support, transportation issues, address transportation issues, and address some of the safety concerns that were affecting these mommies, or mommies-to-be. We decided to focus on first-time mommies who had no other babies, and we wanted to train community health workers to deliver maternal and environmental health patient navigation. So really embedding the guiding principles of patient navigation into a community health worker core across southeastern Louisiana disaster-prone communities. So our disaster-prone communities consisted of six parishes. In Louisiana, we don't call them counties, we call them parishes. And they encompassed New Orleans Parish, Jefferson Parish, Grand Isle is included in Jefferson Parish, Lafourche, Terrebonne, St. Bernard, and Plaquemines Parishes, which is southeastern part of the boot. And we were embedding specialty training outside of the CHW core competencies. So some of the specialty training I'll talk about a little bit later, but included maternal and child health, global environmental health sciences, and the guiding principles of patient navigation. And we were integrating CHWs into prenatal care settings. So these were WIC-eligible women. And although there are some programs that were working with pregnant women, CHWs had really never been embedded into the academic setting. They had been embedded into LSU had a patient navigation program primarily targeting cancer, and our Tulane Cancer Center had a very small patient navigation program. But in terms of academic research in the School of Public Health, community health workers had never been embedded there. So we were evaluating health information, and we were also evaluating health information technology in community-based settings. So we began thinking that, looking at some previous models that were mostly done internationally with mobile health technology, and residentially isolated communities, we have those. And so even though this isn't an international project, we could apply those domestically. And so we have, if you look on a map, New Orleans doesn't seem that far away from the coast. But indeed, sometimes it takes us 2.5 hours to get to a community like Grand Isle, which is along the coast. And that was severely affected by it gets severely affected by large storms that aren't hurricanes, that aren't tropical storms. So we really wanted to address those. And there's no health care there. They have to travel by boat or, an hour and a half by car to get to the nearest hospital. So the importance of moving towards a patient navigation framework, Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, building capacity for an integrated and sustainable CHW workforce in the public health sector, translating the principles of patient navigation into post-disaster community health navigation programs can reduce fragmentation in healthcare systems through three things: strengthening culturally competent approaches to healthcare delivery. So this is what our initial training focused on. Increasing the diversity of the disaster management workforce to eliminate health disparities, and implementing innovative approaches to survey methodology to increase the proportion of vulnerable communities included in post-disaster assessment. One of the things we really wanted to do was have an off-the-shelf tool in case a disaster should strike again. Fingers crossed it doesn't, but we wanted to have an off-the-shelf tool that couldn't just be used for reproductive health. We were targeting reproductive health here, but that could be tailored in the future to address other issues, other healthcare issues. But to have this community health workforce, this core, that in the time of disaster could be easily mobilized and redirected if needed. So the significance, targeting Gulf Coast communities who are historically, socially, and economically disadvantaged. So to those chronically exposed to disaster. Healthcare management is problematic as they encounter fragmented health systems and uncoordinated early detection, diagnosis, treatment, and disease management services. This is not only true post-Katrina, it was true pre-Katrina, and it was still continues to be a problem. Things are much better. However, we need to continually revisit these issues. Patient navigation is a nationally recognized healthcare service delivery model and an evidence-based approach that has led to remarkable improvements in public health. And that's what we're examining here, how we can affect change and improve health outcomes of our pregnant women. So there's lots of articles. There's hundreds and hundreds I've sifted through in developing this protocol with Dr. Maureen Lichtfeld, who is the principal investigator of the study. These are just a few. What we really focus on is this academic community partnership. We are funded through NIH, specifically NIEHS, and we are part of a larger consortium, a U19 consortium. Our U19 consortium is the transdisciplinary research consortium for Gulf Resilience on Women's Health. Gulf Resilience on Women's Health being GROW, G-R-O-W-H. There are four other universities who are part of this consortium, but we have a community outreach and dissemination core, and there are three research projects. The three research projects are R01-like projects, so big research studies, and one of them had to target resilience, and one of those projects jointly had to target community-based participatory research. In Louisiana, we have a lot of community placed research, especially post-Katrina. We had a lot of universities come in, and the community labeled them as helicopter scientists. And so we don't think that those universities meant any harm, but you know, they were flying, they could mobilize easy. They could get into Louisiana and do the research and assess the population when our professors at LSU and Tulane and other universities, Dillard and UNO, had been affected by the storm. Their homes were washed away. And so they couldn't mobilize as easily because they were displaced as well. So these universities came in and explored examined the population, characterized what was happening, but didn't necessarily leave behind meaningful interventions or meaningful programs, or they crumbled, you know, a couple years post-Katrina. So it was very important for us when Dr. Lichtfeld and I were designing this, was to make sure that this had a academic community partnership, and it was true community-based participatory research versus community-placed. And I think it's easy to get some of that confused sometimes. So going back to what I said initially, you know, we met with the community, we talked to our community partners, and one of the things they really wanted to look at was reproductive health. So in my lit review, going back, some of this, you know, from the 1990s to actually, you know, I'm always sort of refreshing myself on what's going on and what's being published, we see that we're not the only ones doing this push. So it's nice to know that we're on the right track, and that it's important to use, that our training was right on target, having this core competency training as well supplemented with specialty modules, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And that also this academic community partnership could include not only subcontracting to community-based organizations, but bringing the community in-house and working with them as part of our research team. So here are four specific aims for the project. As I mentioned, Dr. Maureen Lichtfeld is the principal investigator. The title of the research project is Building Community Resilience Through Disaster Mobile Health, and it's part of the GROW Consortium. And I'll read the aims out loud. Develop a community-driven disaster mobile health platform to improve community resilience, targeting selected WIC programs. Train WIC-affiliated community health workers to serve as disaster interventionists. Determine the impact of a community asset-driven health system integrating community health workers as disaster interventionists. And examine the effect of the interactive capabilities of the disaster mobile health platform on just-in-case and just-in-time risk communication and community risk perception. Now, we're not hoping for a disaster, but just in case a disaster strikes, we had Hurricane Isaac hit us, we have disaster messaging that we can actually test when a disaster strikes, and and test for its effectiveness, but also help these women who are displaced. So we have a network of care providers that we can link women to who have been affected by disaster. So here's the design. I've talked a little bit about it, but I'll go in more detail. We're targeting Gulf Coast communities who are historically, socially, and economically disadvantaged in Southeast Louisiana. They're chronically exposed to disaster. The inclusion criteria are women 18 to 45, WIC eligible, so they don't have to be enrolled in WIC, but they have to meet the WIC eligibility. They're pregnant with their first child, and they have cell phone service with text messaging available. The intervention is utilizing 7 community health workers. We actually trained 10, but we now have 7 community health workers. Some are full-time, some are part-time. They are Tulane employees with full benefits, so we've truly integrated them into our team. They provide social support, health information delivery, and resource linking. They have a resource linking process for pregnant women and their newborns. So we follow these women across the continuum of their prenatal and postpartum care. They administer standardized battery of psychosocial questionnaires via iPads. And they use cell phone text messaging, so weekly health and pregnancy information. We have a program manager for this project, Anna Hassan, who's here, and she really has a fine knowledge of this portal and utilizes it weekly with the community health workers to provide pregnancy information, disaster messaging should during hurricane season, which for us is several months long, ending in November. And government updates. So most recently, with the government shutdown, there was much confusion regarding WIC and whether it was staying open and whether they would still have their resources there. And so we clarified some things. We helped clarify some things for them. So the CHW role for us, CHWs are hired as part-time and full-time Tulane University employees. Participants, the study participants, were separated into 2 cohorts to allow for prenatal and postpartum care support. So cohort 1 was recruited August through November 2012, and we recruited a little over 100, but ended up with 96 staying in the study. So we recruit in the first trimester of pregnancy, which is our baseline. So some at 12 weeks, some women miscarried, and so we had some drop for other reasons as well. And then cohort 2, we're still recruiting cohort 2. That began late August and is going through November. And our goal is 200 for the second cohort. Our CHWs will follow 10 to 40 women each. So in cohort 1, they followed anywhere between 10 to 20 each. This cohort, they're going to follow upwards of 40 women each, dependent on their part-time and full-time employment status. Cell phone text messaging, they utilize very strongly the weekly health and pregnancy information, disaster messaging, and government updates. So here's getting to the core of our training. The development and implementation of GROW core competency-based CHW training approach. So the general core competencies are to your left, and we had 10. So the CHW role in history, outreach methods and strategies, individual and community assessment, effective communication, cultural competence, health education for behavior change, support, advocate, coordinate care for individuals, application of public health concepts and approaches, community capacity building, writing and technical communication skills. At Tulane, we were very lucky that someone else was already doing this. Ashley Wennerstrom was at the School of Dr. Ashley Wennerstrom now, was at the School of Medicine, and she had been training community health workers for a while. And so she was able to help us with these core competencies. The specialization training, we selected faculty, key experts in the field to help with this. So this included community-based participatory research approaches, research fundamentals, ethics, and IRB compliance, being that they would be in-house, they needed to know about the IRB, principles of patient navigation, environmental health sciences, disaster management, maternal and child health, and clinical aspects of mental health services. Targeted chronic diseases, as we move along, clearly want to apply this training module not just to reproductive health, but other diseases. We want to tailor this. We want to move it forward and sustain the project. A glimpse into what our CHWs do. A lot. they recruit and screen for eligibility. They have sites where they recruit, and they're WIC sites. There's also some other sites, some federally qualified health centers in our region. They consent, they enroll. They provide social support, patient navigation services, utilize the text messaging portal, and as I mentioned, they administer the psychosocial survey battery. I mentioned that they begin at baseline, which is first trimester. Then they administer the psychosocial battery at second trimester, third trimester, at delivery, or within 3 to 6 weeks of delivery, and 6 months postpartum. And we truly want to see how stress, anxiety, hostility, their health outcomes change over time. So lesson learned from cohort one, recruitment and follow-up. iPad technology is essential for fieldwork. Technology launched for more effective data collection this past July 2013. We were doing paper-based data collection. And when you have 7 community health workers in the field, this can get a little messy. They're traveling with very heavy lock boxes. They're keeping them in their trunks. And so iPad technology really allowed us to eliminate all the paper and have a streamlined process for data collection and data entry and verification. And so we launched that for cohort 2. Increased importance to position mobile health tech messaging platform in-house, managed and monitored internally. We were using an outside consultant, and we realized we could do this. And so luckily for us, there's been a number of platforms that have sort of hit the market in the past few years. So we were able to transition that in-house, and it's much easier to depend on ourselves versus a consultant. Capturing first trimester pregnant women is challenging. You know, we are discussing best practices for using social media as a recruitment strategy. And of course, where we're, you know, lessons learned and where we're lacking is in a Spanish-speaking community health worker to really recruit those low acculturated Latino pregnant women. So lessons learned again to improve support for cohort 2. Among the many factors that support or detract from a CHW's effectiveness, training plays a preeminent role. So we're beefing up our supplementary training, this cohort, and providing refresher courses for our CHWs. Technology must be harnessed in transformative ways to address critical gaps in CHW training and continued learning. Blended learning, live instruction, and distance education is where we're definitely going to move towards. Multimedia-based refresher courses needed, so interactive, repetitive, on-site training. Supervision is complex, unique blend of motivational techniques. Recruitment is hard work, so we have to find a way to manage community health workers who are in the field better and motivate them better and improve self-efficacy. So observation of routine activities in the field, weekly team meetings, evaluation. It's really hard. This is something that we are definitely focusing more on, and so we are implementing a new scale, a scale to assess therapeutic relationships in community mental health care. It's the STAR survey, and that basically focuses on assessing the CHW participant relationship. And examine CHWs as a potential moderator in the perceived discrimination in healthcare utilization relationship between urban and rural participants. Many of our participants are African American women, and so we want to, that's a key focus for us. And then moving forward, utilizing the Human Resources for Health Action Framework is really important moving forward to manage that. And this website provides an interactive overview of the framework and supporting tools, guidelines, and resources, as well as examples and critical success factors. And without them, there would be no us. So in our audience today, we have Patricia Davis, Christine Dennis, Bonita Harris, Catherine Haywood, Darlene Maharaj-Lewis, Kamisha Sawyers, and Courtney Schultheis, who are our community health workers. All right.